Through his suit helmet, Chaitin's expression is unreadable.
Explain.
I shiver with a sudden realization. Look, they summoned something that hunkered down and sucked all the fucking energy out of this universe, and if Alan sets off an H-bomb, what do you think is going to happen?
Talk more.
Chaitin offers me the cable again. I point to my damaged chest pack, then point my finger straight up. Look, the stars are all reddish, and they're too far apart. That's number one. Redshift means they're all flying away from each other like crazy. That, or the energy and the light they're emitting is being sapped by something. I figure that effect is also what's screwing with our radios. In this universe, the Planck constant is changing. Number two, the sun. The sun's gone out. It went out a few decades ago. That's why the temperature's down to 40 absolute and dropping. The only thing keeping the Earth above cosmic background temperature is the fact that it's a honking great reservoir of hot rocks, with enough thorium and uranium mixed in that decay heat will keep it simmering for billions of years. But that's losing energy faster than it should, too, because something here is distorting the laws of physics. Third, for all we know, all the other suns have gone out, too. The light we see from the stars is fossil radiation. It's been traveling for years, centuries. I take a deep breath and shift my feet. Chaitin isn't saying anything. He's just looking around, looking for signs in the sky or the earth. Something is eating energy and information, I say. Our primary objective in coming here is to find out what's going on and report back. I'm saying we haven't found out yet, and what the captain doesn't know can hurt us all. Chaitin turns back to face me. It makes sense, doesn't it? I say. Like it all hangs together? He holds up a torch to illuminate his face through his visor. He's grinning at me with a face I haven't seen before.
Sehr gut, he says.
Then he drops the torch, releases the catches, and lifts his helmet off. Luminous worms of light writhe soundlessly behind his eyelids, twisting in the empty space of his skull, just like the thing that took Fred from accounting. The outgassing air from his suit wreathes him in vapor as he leans toward me, grabbing, trying to make a close flesh-to-flesh contact, seeing as his comms cable gambit has failed. Just one moment of electrical conduction. The thing that occupies Chaitin's skin and bone is not very intelligent. It's forgotten that I'm wearing a suit too, and that these suits are designed to take a fair bit of abuse. Still, it's pretty freaky. I drop my sack and hop backward, nearly going arse over ears as gravity seems to suck at my backpack. The possessed body scrabbles toward me, and I can see very clearly a trickle of blood bubbling from his nose as I fumble for the basilisk gun at my waist, grab onto it with both hands, and punch both red buttons with my thumbs. For a panicky moment, I think that it's dead, batteries drained by the chilling cold out here. Then all hell breaks loose. Roughly 1 in 1,000 carbon nuclei in the body that used to belong to Chaitin spontaneously acquire an extra 8 protons and 7 or 8 neutrons. The mass deficit is bad enough. There's about as much energy coming out of nowhere as a small nuke would put out, but I'll leave that to the cosmologists. What's bad is that each of those nuclei is missing a whopping 8 electrons. So it forms a wildly unstable carbosilicate intermediary that promptly grabs a shitload of charge out of the nearest electron donor molecules. Then it destabilizes for real, but in the process, it set off a cascade of tiny little acid-base reactions throughout the surrounding hot chemical soup that used to be a human body. Chaitin's body turns red, the kind of dull red of an electric heating element. Then it steams. Bits of his kit melting as his skin turns black and splits open. He begins to topple toward me, and I yell and jump away. When he hits the ground, he shatters, like a statue made of hot glass. The next thing I know, I'm on my knees on the frozen ground, breathing deeply and trying desperately to tell my stomach to be still. I can't afford to throw up, because if I vomit in my face mask, I will die. And then I won't be able to tell Alan what kind of mistake he'll be making if he sets off the demolition charge. This whole world has been turned into a mousetrap, a body-snatching demon, patient and prepared, waiting for us little furry folk with beady black eyes to stick our curious noses inside. I pick myself up, watching the steamy vapor pour from the ground around the molten depressions my knee pads melted in the permafrost as I take more deep, laborious breaths. Static ebbs and flows in my ears like bacon frying, the distorted sidebands of a transmission counting down the minutes to the artificial sunrise. I try not to look at what's left of Chiton.